Blog Talk Radio.
Oh, hello, hello. Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to The Backyard. This is Margaret Marshall, your host, and we are gathering in the backyard to labrish. And for our fans who know what a labrish is and what the backyard is, you can just relax in your easy chair, leave your worries behind, your worries of the day or of the week, and relax in your easy chair, and wherever you're listening from, whatever the weather is, forget about that. Just pretend or dream of the time when you were in your favorite chair, under your favorite fruit tree, or on your veranda, whether back or front, just feeling the trade winds blow across your face, bringing in that beautiful smell of the jasmine or of the fruits. But I can just remember those days. So we're going to do a lot of that tonight because I know the weather is not too nice in some places, including mine. But right now, I am in the backyard just chilling. And I hope the music sort of got you in that relaxing mood, because tonight is going to be, as usual, a very special night. We're here in Backyard Labrish to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the very rich, diverse culture of Jamaica. And oh boy, are we diverse. Now, I know that most foreigners, if you say Jamaica, I think the first thing that comes to mind, or the three things that would come to mind first, is reggae, then beautiful beaches, and perhaps you know what I'm talking about, as we call it in Jamaica, you know what it is, that they perhaps would think about. That's perhaps the people who visit, or perhaps the people who just read, but what we enlighten our callers about all the other wonderful things that went on and still going on in Jamaica, because we are so diverse. So tonight, I have the pleasure of welcoming a special guest who is going to help me celebrate the late Albert Huey, who is considered the father of Jamaican painting. And for visitors or listeners that might not be familiar with him, I'm going to just read a little about him before I open up the board to my distinguished visitor, who's our special guest for the second time. So let me just tell you a little bit about Albert. Albert Huey was born in Falmouth, Trelawney. Trelawney is famous for some special people. And he was born on December 31st. What a wonderful time of the year to be born. In 1920, he passed away in Baltimore, Maryland, earlier this year, in January 29th, 2010. And he was a Jamaican painter. Huey moved to Kingston, and members of the diaspora will know where that is and why. It's like people moving to New York. This is for the sidebar for the foreigners. But he moved to Kingston when he was just 16 years old. And in the 30s, he became part of the Institute group at the Institute of Jamaica, where he received his first formal training. Now, in the early 40s, he worked as an assistant to Edna Manley while she taught at Kingston Junior Center. Further studies followed, and he went to Toronto for his further studies, and he returned to Jamaica. Now, in 1950, he was one of the founding tutors of the Jamaica School of Art and Crafts. Huey exhibited around the United States and Jamaica, and later in his career, settled in the United States. Now, on National Heroes Day in 2009, he was honored by the Jamaican Embassy for his contributions to the Jamaica community in and around Washington. Now, as a painter, he was best known for his landscapes. And some of his pieces express social, political, and nationalistic themes, and many of his early paintings related to, in some way, to manual labor. Now, I was reading a blog where someone mentioned that every painting that he did had a story. I think that writer was Wallace Gamble. Every painting had a story. That's when you know, as he considered himself, he was born to paint. So that's just giving you a little background, but you're going to be hearing some real personal stories from someone who was actually his friend. So now I'm going to open up the mic to my distinguished guest, Phyllis, from Toronto. So just a minute here, Phyllis. I'm opening up the mic to you. Good evening. This is Margaret.
Good evening, Margaret. So pleased to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, you're most welcome. So tell us first a little bit about yourself and your relationship with the artist.
Well, you know, I was thinking today about a line from Emily Dickinson. And she said, not knowing when the dawn will come, I open every door. I stood behind Albert many a day under the lime tree in his backyard on Constant Spring Road, just watching him paint.
Wow.
And listening to him about his decisions for choosing a color. And little did I know that one day, all of that information that was buried in my subconscious would come alive as I do my enameling here. Albert was a wonderful, wonderful teacher and a friend. And funnily enough, all three of us wives were Phyllis's. His beautiful wife, Phyllis Huey, Phyllis Blake, who volunteered at the Jamaica School of Art and Crafts. Wife of Vivian Blake, and
the attorney, the barrister at law.
That's right.
Okay.
That's three Phyllises all together, and Huey's home was the place for us to hang out in the backyard and solve problems. At the same time, watching him painting, which he was always doing, whether there or around the island, because, as he said in an interview, and I must at this time thank a friend, Sandra, who sent me a wonderful article by a woman, Camille Billops, and I give her her dues, B-I-L-L-O-P-S. And it's to be found in a magazine, Artist and Influence, Volume 22, which was published in the year 2003. And she had an interview with Albert, and I'd like to quote what he says here. I have been in love with the country in which I lived and the people that lived there. When you have that, I think you have got everything.
Mm.
And in your work, if you look at something you have done, and if you can walk around it, then you have achieved something. It's a one-dimensional form, but when you look at it, you feel that you can walk into it and around it. In my case, I'm a three-dimensional person. I see form and go into it. And
wow.
That is very evident from any of the works that we want to look at, his landscapes. You just feel drawn to enter into them. And there's a book that was done by, it was published last year, I think.
Mm-hmm.
It's Albert Huey, Father of Jamaican Painting, by Edward Lucy Smith.
Right. I think it's available on Amazon, too.
It is available now. And we have to mention his nudes, which were spectacular.
Right.
Spectacular. And a lot of people underestimate the work or the struggle that Albert went through to become a painter. There is an interesting little part in one of the interviews in which he states that people used to laugh at him and say, you know, you're a black boy. Being an artist is for white people.
Isn't that something?
He persevered. He never gave in. And he praises the Englishman, H.D. Molesworth, who encouraged him to be an artist.
Mm.
And he said, when he met him at 16, he, Albert, didn't even know what an artist was, but continued to draw and paint, earning money painting plates and glasses with enamel paint while still studying, because that money allowed him to buy his canvases and paints. So the road was not easy. The road was not easy at all, but he stayed with it. And that resilience and determination saw him through that he received scholarships to Canada, to England, and all of this helped him because he did for painting what Louise Bennett did for the language.
Oh, that is so interestingly put together.
Yes, because he, for the first time, gave to black men, black women. He showed the beauty of their bodies, whether at work or as a nude, whatever it was. The black Jamaican figure, prominent in all his works.
Right, right.
Because if you think about the classism that we all inherited from the British, class, the middle class, the burgeoning poor at the bottom, they were never celebrated until he put them on paint, on a painted canvas.
Make them visible to the world.
They became visible, first of all, to their own community and to the world. See? So there are many, many things that those people who went before at that time gave to the entire change in the minds of the Jamaican people.
I think that is why they perhaps call him the father of Jamaican painting.
Well, the whole thing is that we were fortunate that Norman Washington Manley married an artist.
Oh, yes. He has a beautiful portrait of her.
Yes, because, for example, here we have had to struggle with a leader who is not interested in the arts. But because of her interest, when he returned to Jamaica, you know of Myers Rum, the company.
Right.
Because Myers had died and left an endowment to create a school of art.
Oh.
And when he got back from England, Edna Manley came to him and with the monies that Myers had left for the encouragement of art in Jamaica, they got together to form the art school. And it was affiliated with the Institute of Jamaica. And it is that school that is now called the Edna Manley School.
I see. So
this history of what went on to create this beginning of seeing many young black lads, girls. There was also a famous female artist. I can't think of her name now. She studied with one of our potters, Seth Ball. She was very excellent. All of that came out of the Jamaica School of Art. My husband himself taught there too. So we had this lively, artistic group working in Jamaica at that time. Because of my husband, I then started teaching some of the students who didn't have all the requirements to start teaching art in a school. They had the art, but not the English. And so every Friday evening, I would be tutoring them with English that they could pass the exam and start making a livelihood as art teachers.
Well, can you tell me about your husband?
My husband...
I was not in Jamaica during that time, you know, because as I mentioned to most of my listeners know that I left in 1959. So I am not familiar with a lot of what went on, you know, after that. So fill us in a little about what your husband did, you and your husband, as artists.
I'll tell you this, that Mr. Norman Manley had gone to Trinidad. And while he was in Trinidad, he met my husband, William Davidson Broom, who was a sculptor and art master there in Trinidad.
Where is he from? Trinidad?
No. My husband was from Scotland.
Oh, I see.
He came from Scotland to Canada, didn't like Canada, left Canada, went to Trinidad. Roby Kidd, a Canadian here, got him that job in Trinidad.
While
he was in Trinidad, he met Norman Washington Manley, who then invited him to Jamaica to teach.
Ah.
Yes. So that he came directly to the School of Art. And there, we all became friends. Of course, we both fell in love. So
were you already involved with the school when he came?
No, I was not involved with the school. I was just starting to teach, regular teaching.
Oh, I got you now. I see.
He went to work at the school. Albert was working at the school. Cecibor, who is one of Jamaica's, he has passed away, one of Jamaica's great potters. He was considered almost fourth in the world.
Wow.
Because he studied there in Britain too. So we had this artistic group, Phyllis Blake, who volunteered all her time there to be sort of in charge of the school. And all the artists, we all were friends, and you know the life that we had then in Jamaica.
Right. As a matter of fact, I read one article that referred to it as the Drum Blair Group. Are you familiar with that term?
That's right. That is a good way of putting it, because you know what Drum Blair is.
Right, right.
That was
well, for our listeners that might come by, because we do have friends of Jamaica and people who just want to know more about our culture that listen to the shows. So can you just sort of fill them in a little as to what, why the Drum Blair group would mean something?
Well, first of all, as I've said, Mrs. Manley was an artist.
Right.
Guiding passion was to help the growth of artists in Jamaica. And so that is the name of their home, Drum Blair.
I see. And this was in Kingston.
That's right.
Uh-huh.
So the Drum Blair group, if you think of her as the umbrella,
uh-huh,
and all the artists who gravitated towards this expression, whether they were painting or doing pottery or whatever it is, this was the power of the Drum Blair group.
Ah.
Phyllis Huey, as the sort of younger but mother of the group, because she has a great warmth and friendliness and laughter. We were either sitting on her front porch or sitting in the backyard, which there was a huge lime tree that we just sat there every evening after leaving the art school. We would just go up to Huey's home because this was halfway between Drum Blair and there.
Uh-huh.
And we would all sit in the backyard or on the front porch discussing, you know, endless things while Huey would paint.
Wow.
Because Huey was seldom seen without a brush unless he was selling his paintings or, you know, promoting a one-man or two-person shows. He was almost always with two things, his cigarette hanging from his mouth or his brush.
Wow. Isn't that something?
And so, it is amazing that when we think about how young he was, only about 8 when he started painting.
Mm-hmm.
But the fact that his grandmother always encouraged him, although nobody else did. And when he was going to Kingston at 16, she gave him the parcel with some money and told him, if things get bad with you in Kingston, come back.
Mm.
But it didn't get bad. And he always said he was very fortunate that she lived to see him become successful.
Oh, that is nice. And there, you know, I just have to throw this in. Almost every story of the men and women who really accomplished something, regardless of what the times were or the positions they were born in, there was always somebody cheering them on and in their corner and encouraging them. I'm saying that to say, you know, in talking about the past, we have so many wonderful lessons to learn for the now, and hopefully some of the future generation will learn from us, that you've got to be the backbone for someone with an idea or, you know, a dream. We just need to encourage them, because every story that is discussed on the show about a person, I mean, even people we don't know, that in the 18-something, there was always somebody mentioned that was their mentor.
Definitely. Well, someone once said, no one makes it through the world alone. And I really believe that. You know,
right.
Somebody might just... You might just be feeling down on a day and somebody might say one word to you,
mm-hmm,
that is fuel that helps you to pick yourself up and continue.
Right. But it was interesting that you mentioned his grandmother.
Yes.
So I want to, at always, with my little sidebar, encourage grandmothers to be there for not just their grandchildren, but any children of the world, regardless of where they are, they might be residing now or where they're from. but they are an important part of the future. That's one way that people now who might not feel they can offer much, but even a word of encouragement for someone that has a dream or a passion. So go on, Phyllis. I'm sorry to throw that in, but I'm not trying to redirect.
I continue with what you said, and I say this, that I had no children, and over the years I've helped many children here in Toronto. And every single Christmas, I think of one boy. He's now 30. He turns to my house, and he remembers something about me. This Christmas present is definitely something that he remembered about me, you know? So
yep.
I think we have to guard ourselves against losing our good Jamaican ways, which is always to be doing good if we can, because it goes out into the universe.
Amen. Amen. So back to Huey now.
Well, I will say this, that I had many, many conversations with Huey over the years. For example, we both loved going to the movies. Phyllis, his wife, and Bill, my husband, didn't like going to the movies. And I've been going to movies like since I was 16. And so we would leave them on the front porch, and both of us would go on down to the cinema. I think it was called Carib.
Oh, yes. Matinee?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
And so we had a lot of time talking about things. I can remember him saying to me once, if you don't learn to stick up for yourself, you'll always be getting angry when the people are gone. When it's easy to say your truth at the moment. And I think about it a lot of times with that, because here where we are, where understanding what words mean in Toronto is a very difficult thing. And so to stand up and speak your truth, it's not necessarily easy. But I always think about him. And in a sense, because he had traveled so widely at such a young age, he was very, very much a man of the world. So he had a lot to offer to, me as a young person growing, just beginning to experience life. Because I remember him saying to me once that, you know, he paints the wealthy to survive. And he also paints the poor because they're a part of his very being.
Mm.
And in that same article from Billups, he says, it was as if certain people did not exist in Jamaica.
Mm.
I would chat with all sorts of people, the working poor, and paint or draw them. And if you have a chance to see the book Albert Huey, Father of Jamaican Painting, you will just see some of those wonderful paintings. There's one in my mind of a guy, if you see him, you know, the kind of guy who's usually slouching up by some shop door or something.
Right, right.
Capture every bit of him, the essence of him. And that's what he really caught, the very essence of our people, because he loved so many of the impressionist painters, Van Gogh, these kinds of people. And somebody asked him once if he was influenced by them. He says, I don't think I was influenced by them. I was excited by their works.
Inspired.
Jamaican paintings are uniquely Jamaican. The influences are uniquely from Jamaica, because he couldn't paint anywhere else. Although he had moved to live in the United States of America, when he wanted to paint, he always had to go home.
Interesting. He had to be in the energy.
It just all the parts, and just all the conversations with him. I remember one day we were talking about the sea. He was somewhere painting the sea, and he started talking to me, and he said, you know, people are always arguing about the colors of the sea. and yet they've not observed it
through
the day. And the great English painter Turner, he tied himself to a ship's mast, had himself tied to the ship's mast, that he could study the sea, you know, morning, noon, night. It's just incredible. And that is the job of the artist. The artist's job is to see with new eyes, or to see and record that people can see the essence of something. So when he painted the sea with a certain color, that is what he was seeing at that time.
Mm-hmm.
See?
Right. As he said, he became three-dimensional. He actually became a part of it.
And you, once you have seen some place that he has painted, or even, we talk about the landscapes, but he has a whole series of royal ponzianas. Magnificence of them. I can't see one without thinking about, you know, the top of Halfway Tree there just before you go off to go up to Stony Hill. Just incredible. These records can never be forgotten.
Right. Well, I just want to mention here, there was an article in Sunday's Gleaner by Howard Campbell, a Gleaner writer, and he talked about an incident, I don't know if you are familiar with it, when Miss Mahogany, a 1960 nude painting, caused quite a problem on Air Jamaica. The first exhibited in Kingston that year was on the Air Jamaica Skywriting magazine, in the magazine. You know, they had that Skywriting magazine. I don't know if it's still being published. But they in 1960, they removed it because of complaints from passengers. Now, it doesn't say who the passengers were, whether they were locals or they were foreigners. But the article went on to say, this is an article in Sunday's Gleaner, that in a 2000 interview, Huey, who died in Baltimore on January 31st at the age of 89, said it was a well-known clergyman who led the protests against Miss Mahogany in 1960. Huey's reaction to the skywriting action 40 years later was similar to the initial controversy. The first time I thought that people were backwards because nude paintings had been shown throughout the world for years, he said. I think these people at Jamaica are limited. The skywriting episode may have ranked Huey, angered him, but it also placed the spotlight on a man who preferred a low profile. It made him visible then. It said, even though he was revered as a master craftsman by local and foreign art buffs, he always kept a low profile, a man in love with his work.
Yep.
So he didn't really care. He just said, you know, they're backwards. It didn't ruffle him, in other words.
Well, I can't even talk about the stupidity of people who want to put fig leaves on body parts or rant and rave about a nude body, because as far as I'm concerned, a nude body is a thing of beauty. I just cannot even get involved with that kind of silly thinking, because coming from people who have all sorts of pornography on the internet and so on and so forth, I have never been able to understand groups that get up and say, we cannot look at a nude body.
Right. But I thought it was, he handled it like a true artist. You know, he says something is wrong with them. They're backwards. It didn't ruffle him at all.
Huey had the gift of understated comments.
Mm-hmm.
He could he could talk in such a way that if we want to think about being a subtle speaker, he never allowed anything or anybody to move him away from his focus, which was producing art. That was the passion of his life, apart from his home, his children, and his wife. That was his passion.
Interesting. Are you familiar with a Wallace Campbell? He's considered one of Jamaica's leading art collectors.
I don't know of him.
Oh, okay. Because this article mentioned that Campbell, who knew Huey for over 35 years, said he was not one for the spotlight. He never cared for the limelight. He loved his art and was a fantastic storyteller. As I came about, saw that, I thought about you, because I know you bill yourself as a storyteller. And it's interesting that he was inspiring to you then, and he is considered to be, every one of his pieces is considered to tell a story.
Okay.
And I just saw the connection there, because from those days, you were apparently admiring that in him.
Definitely. And I really...
And you were not a true artist then. When I say a true artist, I mean you were not practicing your art then, were you?
I will say this, Marit. I am a reluctant artist. And I'll say this to you because very, very early in life, my art master said to me, you could be a wonderful lithographer. And I said to him, I don't want to be any artist. I like my makeup and my nails and my fashions. And he said to me, what if art claims you?
Ah.
Act words. And he's also passed on. Sometimes I smile to myself because I remember him saying this to me. What if art claims you? Because when it comes on to vanity, I must say that was my first name. Nail polish. And you can't be an artist with long nails and nail polish.
Right, right. Isn't that something?
Cut off nails for art.
But apparently, he saw that in you. He knew that one day you would be claimed.
I was claimed.
Right, right. So we'll just have to refresh our listeners about your art. Would you do that for me, please? Because, you know, listeners come on at different times to listen to the show. They're perhaps not on the board. I see 631 is on the board, 718, a couple of people from 718 and all over. But just for the people who might not know exactly who you are, would you just give us a little brief description?
I am an enamelist. I'm the founder of the Canadian Enameling Association. And enameling is a process of fusing glass to metal. And I am constantly working at it. My artwork is at the Guild Shop here in Toronto and Cumberland. And I do many types of enameling because we have many expressions. They can be just small items, large paintings. For example, 1 year here, about 10 years ago, I won a prize for art in public places, and at the Maria A. Shuka Library here in Toronto at Northcliffe on the second floor, there's a large 18-foot enamel work which I did honoring both Garrett A. Morgan, the African-American who invented the traffic signals that are used all over the world, and the role of woman in the world. So
wow.
That has been my passion, working with enamels. My first passion has always been teaching little children. But now, as a senior, I am free to be enameling constantly and working at this wonderful and constantly intriguing art form, because the piece goes in a kiln that's about 1,500 degrees Fahrenheit. And you have to be totally focused on it because it's multiple fast firing, so there's no room for chatting, paying attention to anything else, and a vast body of information about how the different colors behave in the different kiln temperatures. And so it's constantly intriguing. And
it sounds very complicated to the layperson.
That's why I moved from being a wonderful cook to not cooking much of anything.
So can we say that the art has claimed you?
It has claimed me.
Amen. Well, that's when you know you're really a true artist, because you're feeling it. And I suppose some people just feel it earlier. You always had it, because I read someplace where Huey said that he think he was born a painter.
Yes.
He can't remember when he didn't feel that way. You know, he has always been painting on the kitchen wall of his parents' home, and, you know, he was always, as a matter of fact, they were a little concerned about him because he spent so much time with nature.
Definitely. But that, I can't think of any time that I've ever seen Albert doing anything but painting. If you would just allow me, I took down my book just to, because you spoke to me about Mr. Wallace Campbell, and if I could just read the acknowledgments in this book.
Sure.
It says, this book was made possible through the generous financial support of the ATL group of companies and the contributions of Judy Macmillan, who was one of his students, and Alvin Fong Tong, a very, very dear friend, who were both the inspiration and prime movers of the project. We're especially grateful to the collectors who released their valuable paintings to be photographed. They are Mr. Wallace Campbell, the Bromley Collection, Mrs. Shirley Mainier Burke, Mr. and Mrs. Donald Campbell, Jamaica Inn, the National Gallery of Jamaica, Mr. and Mrs. Uriel Parchment, Dr. and Mrs. Archie Hudson Phillips, Sir Roy and Lady Ogier, I think, Mr. and Mrs. Tony Hart, Mr. and Mrs. Ronald Roy, Mr. Alvin Fong Tong, Mr. Lloyd Facey, Dr. and Mrs. Vincent Hill, Mr. H. Norton Duhaney, Mr. Carlisle Hudson, Dr. and Mrs. George Meggs, Mr. and Mrs. Peter King, Dr. Michael Richardson, Mr. and Mrs. Tom Tavares Finson, Judy Ann Macmillan, and Mr. and Mrs. Peter Williams. Finally, special thanks to the man who is the subject of this book, Albert Huey, and his wife, Phyllis, without whose cooperation this venture would not have been possible. So I just thought I would share these names, illustrious people.
And we can relate to, I know I can relate to so many of those names. They're popular Jamaica, prominent, people of prominence names.
Yes.
And I suppose they're the ones who released their art to be photographed. And I saw where in, I forgot, I think it was 2008, one of his pieces was being auctioned, and the starting price was $4,500.
That's right.
So I'm sure now that he has passed, those pieces are a lot more valuable.
Definitely. And he has been generous in speaking the names of all the groups and people who have helped him, because he credits the British Council, you know, for helping him with the scholarship for Canada. And because of his high marks there, his scholarship was extended, and so he was able to go on to London, England.
Right. Well, you know, every single week that I feature someone from the past, I mean, even way back from the 18-something, or the now, there is always a collaboration between, you know, affluent and not-so-affluent, people from different ethnic backgrounds, although everybody from Jamaica is a Jamaican. But as you mentioned about the classes and, you know, the people in certain economic status, but there was always that them coming together with somebody else, two people coming together. Last week we spoke about how the Salvation Army started in Jamaica, and it was a ex-slave, a former slave, and an English businessman.
Yes.
That came together to get it there. So again, I want to talk and hope that the future generation and the now generation will take lessons from all these stories that we're sharing, Phyllis, and it will encourage them to reach across whatever section they are, you know, all over the world. It doesn't matter whether it's Jamaica or not. People need to get together behind a dream, a cause, a passion, or for some good.
Yes.
It is necessary. And what's happening now is no different in a lot of ways than what happened in the past. What we have to do is look for the good things to celebrate, the good things to give more energy so that more of it can come into being. Because like you, you know, I'm a believer that the more energy that you give to anything, it's going to grow. So here in the backyard, every Wednesday, the whole objective is to celebrate and in the good things about our past in Jamaica, to enlighten the rest of the world in some ways that they might not even have had a clue, and to hopefully preserve. All of these shows, all of this information will always be in cyberspace thanks to the good work of Blog Talk Radio, because all the shows are archived. Phyllis, your show that you did with us last year can be, you know, on the click of a button. Someone can get it and listen to your story and listen to your voice, you know, 20 years from now.
Amazing.
So it's really amazing, and I want to again use the platform before we run out of time to encourage the seniors among us in the diaspora, and the seniors of people who are diasporas all over that not necessarily in the country that they come from, if they want to do something for the future generation of that country or that culture, then use the technology that we have now and not let it be a problem, because it's things are so much easier now where we can really, you know, preserve things. We can preserve our photographs, our memories, our voices, our experiences about certain things. So I want to, you know, I have a birthday coming up on Saturday.
Oh.
And I would have gone quarter of a century on the planet. And I do want to encourage the seniors to get involved with life. Don't just sit and let it pass you by. Don't give up. Once there's life, there's hope, and there is something you can do in some way.
Well, I tell you this. There, being a storyteller, there's a story by an old Cherokee grandfather. He tells his grandson, "Son, two wolves live in the heart of human beings. One wolf is called good, the other evil." Yes?
Mm-hmm.
And he says, he itemizes the good, the evil, which I won't just now. And then after a pause, the grandson says to him, "And which wolf wins, grandfather?" And the grandfather said to him, "The one that you feed." So following on from what you have just said, if those seniors who want to just stay in their little spaces and say, "Oh, the world is a scary place,"
mm-hmm,
looking at all the wonderful things we have, because I think Oprah likes to say this. She says, "What is luck? Luck is when preparation meets opportunity."
Amen.
Those people help those people. But Huey was prepared when he met the people who could help him.
Mm.
Working and practicing, because art is constant dedication to doing it over and over. Right now I'm working, I'm drawing every morning because I am doing a piece just to please myself about Haiti and the French Connection. You have to get up every day and do that drawing, do that painting, or it just doesn't happen. So if he was not prepared,
mm-hmm.
he would not have had all that happen to him. Because you really think back to a time like that in Jamaica, to be successful, to care for your wife and three children out of your paintings.
Mm-hmm. When art was not as appreciated as it is now.
It's just amazing when I look back at it. And he went on to do so many things. He was an artist in residence at Spelman College, you know, and then after that at Georgia Tech. So, I mean, he has been honored in so many countries.
And, you know, that's the city that I live in, Atlanta.
That's true. That's true.
Yes, you're talking about, you know, places I'm very familiar with. I didn't even know that until you mentioned it.
There you go. And in that same article I was telling you about, a question the reviewer asked him was, what would you like your legacy to have been? What have you given to the world? And I found it such a Huey response. He says, I've given to the world what the world has given to me.
Mm.
It has given me the opportunity to paint and the opportunity to find subjects I wanted to paint. It's a great gift.
Wow. Wonderful. Just wonderful.
Well,
Phyllis, I just appreciate you. You know, it's always part of my objective of doing Backyard Laverage is to have living stories, you know, of the people who lived the period that we're talking about and who can relate. It's one thing to read something, but to hear something from somebody's voice, it takes on a whole different meaning. So I really appreciate you coming into the backyard with us this evening to share your experiences with being a friend of Albert Huey. And I must confess, I did not know too much about him because, you know, I've lived... Even in the States that I'm living now, I've lived here longer than I even lived in Jamaica. I ever lived in Jamaica. And I was, before I retired, busy just raising my American family and being part of, you know, I've been an American citizen from 1966. So I am just being exposed to a lot of things that was important and happening on the island after I left. So I am just very intrigued, and I consider myself blessed, and I'm honored that I'm so grateful that I found you, or you found me, however, and that you're able to come. We can come together in the backyard, even though we've never met. But we can come together in spirit and energy to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve. Isn't it wonderful?
It's wonderful, and I want to tell you, those were some of the happiest days of my life, sitting in the backyard of Albert and Phyllis Huey's home, and just enjoying his skillful stories of a Jamaica that we didn't even know then, with him going around, you see?
We didn't get to travel so much.
Pardon me?
I said we didn't get to travel so much around the island.
Well, your mother was letting you out as a girl in the first.
Right. And you know, foreigners who look at the place as such a tiny little place, a dot on the map, they feel that you know everybody and you know every part of the island. And I said, oh my gosh, that is so wrong. Because I never knew Montego Bay until I lived here and went back. My plane stopped there on one of the trips back. Isn't that something? And to a person who's born in a large country, even my children, like the United States, they can't even wrap their mind around something like that happening and this little dot on the map. So I hope that our stories will be an enlightenment to you know, children of the diaspora and their and our grandchildren, you know, and just people who want to know about other cultures or people who love Jamaica. They're fans of Jamaica.
Yes, yes.
So I really appreciate you being here with us in the backyard. And would you like to share anything else with us? We have a couple of minutes, and I'd like to mention that anybody on the board that have called in, first of all, I want to recognize my callers that are listening on their computers, and I thank you for being here. And some people are here each week. And for the people who may come by later, we appreciate you. And I may ask you, if you find a show that you like or intrigue you, you can pass it on to somebody that might not be on our list or might not even know that we exist, because that really inspires us when we see our numbers of downloads increasing, and they have been very much so. So I know it's because of all of this support that I can go on. And we have some loyal callers in who call in every week, and I want to ask them now, if you would like to weigh in or to ask Phyllis a question or to make a suggestion or a comment, please hit 1 on your keyboard so I can open up the mic. So I'll give you a few seconds to see if anybody's going to raise their hands. I you know, the callers sometimes just want to listen quietly. I see a raised hand. So I'm going to open up the mic to 718-379. Good evening. Welcome to the backyard. You got Margaret and Phyllis.
Yes, Phyllis and Margaret. This is Lay in the Bronx.
Hey,
I just wanted to make a comment that many years ago, I forget who was the artist that published in the New York Times, a Jamaican artist. And ever since he published, it's impossible for the average guy with an average salary to purchase a Jamaican artist's work.
Mm.
You know, it raised the price so much. I mean, I buy what I can afford here and there when I see a Blackwood or what's another fella that I see shows often, but they are not cheap.
And all right. Do you have any Hueys?
No, I don't.
I was talking to one of my cousins who live in Maryland today, and she says she's got one.
Oh.
She's so pleased with herself.
Yeah,
and we haven't even talked about his woodcuts, because he had some magnificent woodcuts that he did.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
That's a whole different area, using liner cuts to create art, which if you look it up, you'll soon see. But it doesn't, an artist doesn't have to be expensive. I have a painting that I bought in Antigua that I just love, and I paid little or nothing for it. I'm not concerned if the artist is famous or not. But the fact is, I love it. And that should be the first thing that you go for.
But Phyllis, the point I'm making is that because the Jamaican artist was exposed in the New York Times,
mm-hmm.
it gave the following artists a platform to sell their goods.
That was great.
You know? It's not that they're more expensive than, we're not looking at the price. It's what grabs you. But
right.
I'm just saying that the Jamaican artist could make a living, you know.
Sure. And Albert was very fortunate to have like a mentor too.
Yes.
His name was Philip Sherlock, who was the head of the Institute of Jamaica.
Yes.
He would take his works, you know, to his tutu parties and sell them, and then Hugh would go and collect the money for nothing. I mean, no commission or anything like that. Albert states that he was a great help to him. So
right.
It's amazing. And I go back to saying luck is preparation and opportunity, because
uh-huh.
Philip Sherlock would not have been helping him if his work wasn't of a certain standard.
Right. So it goes back to what Professor Nettleford said. You know, whatever you are doing, do it to the best of your ability. You know, continue to be educated about your profession, regardless of what level you are considered in the society. Just be the best. Just do your best. And that's what shines. You know, when a person is putting their all in something, it shows. It really shows.
We have all eaten food from people who don't really want to cook it.
Oh, yes. You wonder sometimes how things, some things stay so good because it really is done with love.
Love. It's love. So
definitely. Mm-hmm. I know when my kids were small, they used to, it could be Kool-Aid, and they, I don't know if they were BS in me or what, they'd say, oh, Mom, we had this at such and such a person, it didn't taste the same. And I say, honey, it's the love in it. But it really shows, you know. So we have so much to learn, Phyllis. And I am always learning from other people's story, whether it's verbally or reading about them, that there's always something that we can relate to the now and hopefully the future.
Life is for living.
Right, definitely. And in all the cases of our Jamaican sons and daughters that have done this, that have contributed in great ways all over the world. I mean, I could have a show every single day on a different discipline and on a different person that has contributed something from way back and even up to now.
Yes, ma'am.
So when you think of how tiny that island really is compared to other countries and compared even to some of the Caribbean countries, and the amount of wonderful things that have come forth from that country. No one should be passing information that is negative, because we have to catch up on using the internet to really enlighten ourselves as well as the rest of the world about our contribution.
Definitely. And you have made a wonderful start, because I tell everybody about this, because I say, you're not just talking, and there is an Ashanti proverb. It says, do not follow the path. Go where there is no path and begin the trail. And you have done that for us.
Oh, thank you so much. I appreciate that. And, you know, I was basically doing it, it sounds selfish, but for myself, because I want to learn. I want to know. And that is one of the things that drove me to start this. And I think that it has invigorated me. It really has. Because I just don't have enough hours to find out all the things. And, you know, it's so inspiring when I get the information. And there is so much good, rich information out there about people and times that we don't even know anything about on that little island.
Somebody told me once there are special electromagnetic forces in Jamaica.
I wouldn't doubt that, because when we did the and lay our guests from the Bronx can relate to this. When we did a tour of the parishes at one time, we were finding out things about the minerals and things there that don't exist any other part of the world.
Well, that's what this man told me.
Oh, yes, it's true. It is really, really true. And when we did our fruits, I mean, it was unbelievable the amount of nutrients that was in one fruit that we didn't even know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that a lot of people don't know. So I'm hoping that the people on the board, as well as people who come by later, will find the show informative and entertaining, and we would like to encourage them to, if they find a show that they like, just make a little comment on it, because the our platform people, the Blog Talk Radio, take all that into consideration. But Phyllis, you have been a wonderful guest. It's always great to have you in the backyard. And I really thank you and appreciate you and think that you were so blessed to have experienced all of that that you explained with us, and that friendship and that nurturing. With this wonderful human being who just left us but will always remain in some way. Isn't that wonderful what he's left in various homes and in various minds? Because I'm sure that his work... Do you know anything about his children?
Definitely.
Well, tell us a little about that. We still have a couple more minutes.
Well, he has three children. Evelyn, who is the oldest, he has done some beautiful paintings of her. Christine, who is in dentistry.
Uh-huh.
And Lisa, who lives in New York. They're all in the States.
Oh, really? Well, I'm hoping somehow they will find this show.
Well, I naturally sent them information about the show.
Oh, good. Well, they might be listening online, or perhaps they'll come by later on. And if you do speak or interact with them, you can tell them that they can just look for that show and click on it anytime, and they'll hear us blabbing here in the backyard.
And I hope that what you they could go online, so I told them that too. I sent them an email about the show tonight. So
oh, great.
And if they're not out there, no, because you told me I could say people could go online and access.
Right, right.
They're all grown up now, and Evelyn, Christine, so they had two grandchildren. Huey and his wife, Phyllis, had a son who died quite early, just a massive heart attack at work. And so I speak of the three girls, but he actually had four children. And Christine is married. They have a beautiful home and two beautiful children, Bryce and I shouldn't mention only Bryce, whose name I always remember. See? These women always remembering the little boy and forgetting the little girl.
Oh, wow. But yes, so it must be wonderful to have a close relationship, you know, with someone like that who is genuine, and, you know, you're still in touch with the family. So that is quite nice. And we all have a legacy to leave. And, you know, we do that through communication.
Yes.
And I am so thankful to you and to all our fans, the Backyard fans, that have communicated by downloading the shows and passing it on to their friends and sending me emails. And so I want everybody to know that I really, really appreciate it. And since I'm celebrating my birthday this month, I want to say happy birthday to everyone with a birthday in March. And no matter what age you are, it is the most wonderful time of your life. So you have a lot to look forward to, because I am looking forward to being in the backyard with fans that are on the board and online, and guests like you, Phyllis, for a long, long time.
And a very, very happy birthday to you. Treat yourself to something very special.
All right, I will. Well, thank you so much, and I hope to have you back very soon.
All the very best to you.
Thank you, dear. Good night. Does anyone on the board want to say anything else? Please raise your hand, or 718, you're still open.
Yes, soon I'm still open. I just wanted to ask Phyllis where... she mentioned that she had a work in some location in Toronto. What was that again?
It's the Maria A. Shuka Library.
Oh,
and it is at the corner of Northcliff and Eglinton.
Okay.
Eglinton is Main Street, and it's on the second floor. And my father was a great Marcus Garveyite, not making a lot of noise, just quietly Marcus Garveyite. And Marcus said, the artist must document the history of the people. And so I chose to honor Garrett A. Morgan, because I always tell children about that when you go to the corner of the street, here is a black man who used his intelligence to give a gift to the world, and in 1923 sold a patent right to General Electric. What then should you be doing with your life? That was his gift. What is your gift? Because I never talk about black history to children without asking them, what will their gift be?
Wonderful. What a great way to stimulate their interest.
Yes.
And really awaken their consciousness.
In front of Mr. Bronx, please go and look at it.
Yes, will do.
All right. I see another hand raised, 631-451. Your mic is open. Good evening. This is Margaret in the backyard.
Good evening, Margaret and Phyllis.
Good evening.
I just want to say, you know, thanks for sharing all that information with us. It was really something to listen to all that about him, you know. And, Margaret, I just want to wish you a happy birthday, all the best, and many, many more.
Thank you so much, dear. Thank you. Well, with that said, I am going to say good night to all my fans and listeners, and to remind you that we're here each week on a Wednesday at 8 o'clock in the backyard to labrish, and the objective of our labrish is to celebrate, enlighten, and preserve the rich, diverse culture of Jamaica, land we love. Good night.
Good night.